morning with a Fuel of America press call. We have Bob Dineen from RFA and Brooke Coleman from AEC on to talk about biofuels leaders and oil industry letters to EPA last week, as well as a new ad campaign from Fuels America addressing the choice before EPA. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Bob Dineen, who can get us started.
Thank you, Aaron. A few weeks ago, the API and AFPM sent a letter to EPA for the first time acknowledging what we've been saying for quite some time, and that is that the methodology EPA uses in determining the RVOs for 2014, 2015, and 2016 are critically important. Now, of course, API expressed its enthusiastic support for the methodology EPA used in proposing the 2014 RVO, the proposal that stirred so much controversy and ultimately paralyzed the agency, keeping it from finalizing a 2014 rule. At the heart of the controversy is whether the agency, as a matter of law, is allowed to consider the so-called blend wall in determining RFS volumes. The oil industry says, yes, we've reached the maximum level of ethanol that can be blended into gasoline because there aren't enough vehicles or infrastructure to accommodate higher blends. We say that's nonsense because the RFS legislation was designed to break the blend wall, to force the investments in infrastructure and technology that would drive increased consumer choice. The fact the law ultimately requires 36 billion gallons of renewable fuel to be used, far more than can be used in a 10% blend, certainly suggests where a bipartisan Congress landed on this issue in 2007. But API is wrong in its belief the blend wall should limit our use of renewable fuels for other reasons. First, look at the statute. The law provides a waiver from the required volumes for two circumstances: severe harm to the economy, which can't be demonstrated when ethanol is less expensive than gasoline, and inadequate domestic supply. The Congress specifically rejected versions of the bill that included infrastructure and demand as a factor in such a waiver. But second, as a practical matter, API is also wrong about the market's ability to consume more than 10% ethanol. There are now 17.5 million FFVs on the road, capable of using anything from E10 to E15 to E85. And while EPA has approved E15 for as much as 85% of the vehicles on the road, manufacturers themselves now provide warranty coverage for E15 for as many as 41 million vehicles. That's more than three times as many cars warrantied for E15 than are currently required to use premium gasoline. We don't have a problem locating premium fuel in this country, and there's no reason other than greed E15 is so scarce. This is not a market or consumer issue. This is a clear case of an incumbent industry unwilling to acknowledge a changing landscape and trying desperately to hang on to its monopoly, refusing to make investments in infrastructure or allow franchisees to offer consumers a lower-priced, higher-octane renewable fuel. That's exactly why the RFS was deemed necessary in the first place, to break the stranglehold big oil has over our nation's fuel supply. That's also why several companies and trade groups, including the RFA, the Corn Growers, POET, Novozymes, Growth Energy, Abengoa, and the Advanced Ethanol Council, among others, wrote to the EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy last week, responding to the API-AFPM fairy tale and laying out the choice she has before her. She can choose the way of innovation, economic growth, low-carbon fuels, consumer choice, and energy security, or she can cater to the whims of a recalcitrant incumbent industry twisting the statute to introduce demand into a supply waiver and setting this nation's energy and environmental future backwards. That choice is also highlighted in a new digital and television ad campaign that Fuels America is announcing this morning. We intend to make sure that the administrator, members of Congress, and the president himself understands the very clear choice that will be made with this impending RVO decision. American innovation or oil industry profits? Low-carbon fuels or fracking? Value-added markets for farmers and jobs across rural America or imports? A sustainable energy future or a return to the failed energy policies of the past? It seems like a pretty clear choice. And I'll now turn it over to Brooke Coleman, the executive director of the Advanced Ethanol Council, to talk a bit more about the ads in detail. Brooke?
Thanks, Bob. By way of an introduction, my name is Brooke Coleman. I run the Advanced Ethanol Council. I've spoken to many of you before, but we represent all the first movers in cellulosic ethanol. So when you look out at the marketplace, you see Quad County, Poet DSM, Abengoa, DuPont, all building cellulosic ethanol plants across this country. Novozymes has the largest enzyme plant in North America, in Nebraska. Those are our companies. So top line, starting tomorrow, Fuels America is launching a six-figure television campaign in D.C., which will include the morning news, Sunday morning talk shows, and cable television in D.C. As part of that, we're also launching a significant digital campaign that includes a Politico homepage takeover, a Real Clear Politics energy takeover, and banner ads on Roll Call's energy page. As we move through this, I want to just emphasize for a second what this is really all about, and it's pretty simple. The question is EPA going to, for the first time, waive the RFS if the oil industry refuses to distribute renewable fuels? And so what this breaks down to is if oil companies know they can avoid the RFS by simply refusing to enter into contracts to buy and distribute our fuel, advanced biofuels will cease to have a U.S. market and U.S. investment will dry up. And so when people look at this from the advanced perspective, in order to innovate at any marketplace, you need to be able to demonstrate to investors that you have a market, that you will have demand for your fuel. The U.S. motor fuel marketplace and the global motor fuel marketplace is actually quite unique in that it is a non-competitive, non-price-driven marketplace controlled at the top by OPEC, and there's no better example of that than the last 6 months when OPEC colluded to drive down the price of fuel for a variety of different reasons. So if you do not have the opportunity to compete based on price, that is the reason that we do not have innovation at the pump. So without policy, without the RFS forcing incumbents to do this, to use more innovative, lower carbon advanced biofuels, you will not have investors investing in lower carbon advanced biofuels in the United States. What the RFS was before November 13, when EPA and President Obama proposed to introduce this new waiver language, was the gold standard in the world for advanced biofuels policy. What it became in the wake of November 2013 through today, and hopefully that will change on June 1st, is in essence a policy that falls way down the line and is no longer the leading policy globally for driving advanced biofuels. And that is why, almost without exception, our companies are looking in China, in Brazil, in some cases in India, and in some cases in Europe, to develop their second and third projects, while the first ones wait to see what the president is going to do. I would also like to offer that this is not just an issue for advanced biofuels. If refusing to comply with the RFS works as a way to get around this program and to waive this program, that becomes the playbook for how to avoid other Clean Air Act programs that this president and this administration care about a lot. And I'm making direct reference to not just 111D, the carbon smokestack rules, but virtually any other Clean Air Act program designed to clean up our air, improve smokestack emissions from a public health perspective, improve tailpipe emissions from a public health perspective. And so moving forward, we know what has happened already. The new proposal starting in November 2013 has frozen about $13.7 billion in investment in cellulosic ethanol and other advanced biofuels. Many of these companies can hold their breath and wait for the president to get this program back on course. What we cannot do, now that we know what the score is with regard to the two things in question, is have another bad proposal on June 1. It sends yet another market signal that our companies should actually go overseas to develop their next project. So in closing, I just want to make sure that it is very clear what's going on here. For pretty much the first time, the American Petroleum Institute and AFPM have come out on May 1st and written a letter to Gina McCarthy at EPA. And what they have said is, moving forward, you must include the methodology, using that word in very specifically, in the next RVO that comes out on or around June 1. The rest of the letter goes on to describe how that is the only thing that will protect U.S. consumers in their own mind, and I put quotes around that, from the benefits of renewable fuels. And so they have now, for the first time, come out and said that it is the methodology that protects their monopoly. And so the president and this administration have a very, very clear choice. The choice is between American innovation and protecting the status quo with regard to oil industry profits and oil industry control of the pump. With that, I will open it to questions and the moderator.
Thank you, Bob and Brooke. And a couple of you I see are in the queue already. If you have questions, press star 3 and we'll put you through. First up is Rachel Gantz with Opus.
Hosting the call, wanted to find out if RFA and AEC have requested a meeting with OMB regarding the RFS proposal, and do either of you believe that EPA will actually issue its proposal by the June 1st deadline?
Rachel, as you know, meetings with OMB are sort of a normal course of business. I'm not going to discuss with you whether or when we're going to have such a meeting, but I think you could expect that that will occur.
Yeah, that's the same answer for the Advanced Ethanol Council. In terms of June 1, we expect a proposal on or around June 1 at this time. We all know what the history is, but the administration seems quite motivated.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Well, it looks like that answered the question of the other gentleman in the queue. I'll give folks another minute or so to dial star 3 if you have anything further. All right. Next up, Jen Delohi with Fuel Fix.
Thanks. I just appreciate your taking my question and doing the call. I just wanted to ask about it's a question for Brooke. I just really wanted to know about the where you see the cellulosic target, where you would like to see it, frankly, partly because, you know, under the consent decree and the agreement, you know, it looks like they're looking at fixing in actual production, at least for 2014. So just wanted to get your insight on where the number should shake out.
Well, as you know, the predicting early markets, early innovation markets is difficult, and we do have the court case that preserves the forward-looking part of the RFS. So in other words, the RFS is not supposed to reflect past years, except in this case, this may be an exception because we've already passed the year in question. But going forward, it's supposed to look prospectively. The difficult question really is not how much cellulosic ethanol will be available. The EPA will make their calls and historically has been pretty diligent about doing that because there are relatively a small number of cellulosic ethanol producers that can call those who are in my council and get raw numbers in terms of their expectations when they actually establish when they're going to put out the rule. The bigger question is how much biogas is going to be available. Biogas is a cellulosic biofuel as part of the RFS, and I can't speculate on how much biogas is going to be available, but it's going to be, in terms of the cellulosic ethanol capacity plus biogas, is going to be significantly more, obviously, than they proposed last time. So they proposed 17 million gallons. This, you know, we're going to be much, much higher than that, exponentially 3, 4, 5 times higher than that, I would expect the final number to be.
To underscore Brooke's point on that, while for the 2014 RVO they proposed, as Brooke noted, 17 million gallons. when biogas was considered at the end of the year, there was actually more than 35 million gallons of cellulose and biofuels that had been produced. So the number of gallons is more than just cellulose, as Brooke indicated, and they've met the targets in the past.
And this is just to belabor the point for 1 second, this is exactly what the oil industry is fighting, right? So for just like you saw exponential growth in the corn ethanol industry after the early years, and much more choice at the pump, and very quickly ethanol replaced MTBE and moved into the marketplace in a very, very expeditious way. You're starting to see exponential growth in the cellulosic biofuel space. And so what this fight is really all about, while I frame it as a corn ethanol issue, is really about the 21 billion gallons that are still in the RFS that are predominantly advanced biofuels. So there's a bit of a stalking horse here going on in terms of their strategy. This is really about low-carbon fuels.
All right, thank you. Next, we have Ellen Ferguson with CQ.
Hi. What kind of sense are you getting out of EPA about which way they may be going?
This is Bob, Ellen. That's a very good question. EPA has not held stakeholder meetings. They've not been very communicative on where they are. But I ultimately think this is probably not something that EPA will decide. While it will be their rule, and they'll have to be comfortable whatever it is, this is really the White House's call. And there have been so many personnel changes at the White House, it's hard to read them, too.
Yeah, Ellen, I think, you know, I look at it one of two ways. I look at it through two lenses. The first is, that on the one hand, it's hard to believe that now that this administration knows what's at stake, what the importance of the methodology and the waiver language is, who wins, who loses, as we've laid out on this call, that they would then go and affirmatively say, yeah, we want to do it API's way. It's just sort of mind-boggling that this president, given what he stands for in terms of both his legacy and what he's been doing, what he ran on, and what he's been doing since then, would go and say, you know, now that it's clear who's on which side, I'm gonna choose API. On the other hand, we're fairly certain that the bad methodology is one that is still being considered by certain advisors to the White House and to EPA, primarily because it alleviates political pressure on them from the oil industry. And so we don't know where they're going to go. We suspect that there is more than one option on the table, and that's the purpose of what we'll be doing over the next month or so. This ad buy is really only the first of a long series of strategies that we'll be deploying to make sure that it is very clear, not just to Washington, D.C., but to the American consumer, what this choice is all about.
All right, thank you. And next we have Dan Looker.
Okay, my question, can you hear me?
Yep,
we can.
My original question, I think, was answered. I had wondered if you'd gotten a meeting with anyone at the White House, and Bob, I think you said you can't confirm whether or not you'll be meeting with OMB, but I wondered, and I think Brooke started to answer my second question, which is what you hope to accomplish with the ad buy. Is this aimed primarily at the advisors in the White House then?
I can answer that question after I turn off the beeping sound in the background here. We're targeting the policy experts and those making the decision in Washington, D.C. on this issue. And so this is hardly the only thing that we're doing as a coalition. But this particular ad buy is directed at those who should be reading the API letter, who may not be, those who should be considering closely what the API letter says. And so we're focusing really in on the decision makers and the influencers around Washington, D.C. And near the administration at EPA.
That's certainly true, and you can look at, you know, where we're going to be placing the ads, and it's clearly focused on decision makers. But this ultimately is a decision that is critically important for consumers. It is their choice that is being denied. It is their pocketbooks that are being impacted by potentially an EPA decision that would limit the use of a lower-priced, higher-octane fuel in the marketplace. So, I mean, this is something that resonates across demographics and across the country.
Thank you. And now we'll hear one last question, or maybe we'll have time for one more. Spencer Chase.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. With the consent decree, EPA is to release something by June 1, but I don't believe OMB is bound by that consent decree, and under their statute, they've got 90 days to review this, which would push a release back into early August. So, I mean, they've said that they're going to work with OMB to actually get something released by June 1, but is OMB really under the same pressure that the EPA is on this?
Well, I think OMB has acknowledged the time frame in announcing an expedited review of this, and I would be quite surprised if the administration was not able to get the proposal out in the time frame that they've agreed to with the courts.
Thanks. And then we will just take one final question from John Harsh.
Yes. You say Congress is one of the targets of your new ad campaign. What level of support or opposition do you expect from Congress?
Well, to be clear, this ad campaign is really focused on the administration and the decision makers there, so this is not a congressional decision. The Congress has spoken pretty loudly in the last couple of weeks. 37 senators sent a letter to Gina McCarthy calling for not just a robust RFS, but one that does not allow the oil companies to skirt their obligations under the law, which is a direct reference to the methodological/waiver issue that we're talking about today. And so really Congress has weighed in on this issue, and it's up to the President and the Obama administration and EPA to make the right choice.
All right. Thanks very much, and thanks to everyone for dialing in for the call this morning.